You were supposed to give us some hope. What happened to that? Okay, we are running out of time, but we do have a lot of questions. Do you want to take one of those or? Okay. Which one?
Either one.
Okay. So, okay, this I want to hear too. Is Mossad actively operating in U.S. Institutions versus the power of AIPAC and the charitable Israeli institutions? Wait a minute, that's...
It's a good question.
Okay.
I don't exactly know the answer, but my sense is that AIPAC is an effective enough organization that the Mossad doesn't have to do its work there. It can confine itself to the usual intelligence tasks. There is a lot of concern in the CIA about the possibility of Israeli spying on the CIA. There are pro and factions within the CIA that have different views about Israel. But my sense is that it's not the Mossad that does the Israeli government's work in Washington, it's AIPAC.
Okay. And this is for Colonel Wilkerson. What could and would Iran do in response to an attack?
This has been wargamed ad nauseum almost by the U.S. military. And there are a number of different scenarios. There's one where the U.S. around the clock, three carrier battle groups bombing, does so much damage that Iran is, as you might well imagine, pretty shocked in those 14 to 21 days of bombing, much the way you saw Saddam Hussein in the first Gulf War. And then Iran comes out from the dust, so to speak, counts its casualties, mans its hospitals and so forth, and essentially goes into guerrilla war. And that means if we want to do anything other than just bomb them, which is simply going to drive their nuclear program underground, speed it up, they'll coordinate with the North Koreans, they'll have a nuclear weapon in 18 months, and then watch us hesitate to invade, because that's what they know they'll be doing by building that weapon, we'll have forced them to make that decision. So if we invade immediately, we're going to be confronting a country that is huge. I've done the war planning for it when we were planning in the 80s for the Russians to break out of Afghanistan and come on down to Chabahar and Bandar Abbas, the two ports, the warm water ports. We actually thought that was a possibility. We didn't think the Russians came into Afghanistan to just be in Afghanistan. And then, of course, they got bogged down there and couldn't come. But it's a tough country. So either way, an immediate invasion is going to take $5 or $6 trillion in 10 years of occupation to even begin to say that we're in control of the country. Look at Iraq. It's one-third the size of Iran. And it's going to probably put red bullseyes on the back of every soldier and Marine in the country, red bullseyes that every terrorist group will flock to engage. If we take the other scenario and evade immediately, you're going to have the same thing, but you're going to have it quicker. And you're going to at least obviate the possibility that they'll build a nuclear weapon, go underground and build a nuclear weapon.
Here's a question for you. Any thoughts on Kushner as an intelligence effort? And then there's another one, the same, all these questions I want to know. Any thoughts on assistance Israel might have generated to the Trump campaign? And any thoughts on Israel's large purchases of U.S. stocks and possibly to prop up the market? I haven't heard that one.
I don't know anything about that last question. Jared Kushner is so incompetent that it doesn't look like the work of any professional intelligence organization, what he's doing. The man is deeply in debt and desperately trying to figure out a way how to get out of it. So while he's very close to the Israelis and using Israeli contacts in Qatar and Saudi Arabia to solve his financial problems, I don't really see intelligence agencies being involved in that. I don't know why they would want to get involved in that.
For Colonel Wilkerson, how far do you think Russia will go in helping on the side of Syria, Iran, et cetera, in the Syrian conflict? How much further, I guess?
The difficulty there is the imponderable, as von Moltke pointed out, no plan outlasts the first bomb being dropped. Once you start killing Russians, once you start shooting Su-27s down, then they start shooting F-16s, F-15s, and F-22s down, you have a whole different dimension. You've got a real problem then. Controlling that escalation theory says you're probably not going to be able to control that. So that's what really worries me. Now, that having been said, Putin realizes that. And Putin has shown that he knows he doesn't have a whole lot of assets behind him compared to the assets that the United States could bring to bear were it serious. And so he's been very careful about the way he moves into gaps, exploits them, moves back, and so forth. He's getting ready to do it in Kosovo right now. Mitrovica, the northern province, is being infiltrated by the Serbs. Watch that. McMaster and others aren't even aware it's happening. But he's very smart. So the thing that ought to be happening right now is that the United States and Moscow, despite all this mess that's been created between us, ought to be cooperating to bring the two parties that really need to talk, Riyadh and Tehran, and get them to deal with their problems diplomatically, and then turn that diplomatic success on to the Syrian conflict, which is being fueled principally by Saudi money, with Prince Bandar in charge.
Okay, here's a question for you, Morley. How important was the cooperation between CIA and Mossad in places like Central America and Zaire?
Zaire. Well, in the case of Central America in the 1980s, there was a significant Israeli role. The Reagan administration barred from military aid to the counter-revolutionary forces in Nicaragua and restricted in aid to other military regimes, turned to outside actors, their own aid network, but also to the Israelis to ship arms, ship money, and it was never clear to me whether it was a formal Israeli intelligence operation or whether these were sort of Israeli contractors who were simply allowed to operate in the region. But the CIA and the Reagan administration relied on them quite a bit for what they called counterterrorism work, for shipping arms and expertise into the region in order to prevail in the civil wars. So in that time, the Israeli role was definitely significant. I am not well informed about the CIA and Mossad role in Zaire, so I can't really comment on that.
Okay. We have 3 minutes left, I think. So based on the, this is not a fun question to end the conference with, based on the incredible increasing trend of impunity among aggressive military action, like in the Levant, and genocidal warfare, what stops Israel from launching a similar final solution to the Palestinian people?
You want me to take that one?
You can, either one of you.
I don't, at this point, I don't think Lieberman or Netanyahu or any of the more ultra-right-wing aspects of the Zionist political movement, Israeli government, whatever we want to call it, are suicidal. I don't think they're that fatalistic either. I think they really think they can wind up, or some subsequent prime minister can wind up, with Jordan, with probably pieces of Syria, certainly the Golan, and Israel can be greater Israel. And they're willing to back off from some of that as powers interpose themselves and give them a problem with that. But they want a greater Israel. For a number of reasons, security reasons, the old biblical prophecies and so forth. And so I think they're going to try to keep this in the air to start with. You're going to see some bombing. I think you're going to see over the next 6 months, they're going to take Lebanon on. They're going to take Hezbollah on in Syria and Lebanon. And when that doesn't work, or when Hezbollah presents them as they did in July 2006 with some new options in terms of what Hezbollah can do to them, and maybe even the Lebanese armed forces do too, it might get tricky. And then there might be armored formations, ground units, infantry, and so forth. And that's when the door opens for general conflict. There was a question asked too about the base. Here's why I think we put the base there, because the last time I spoke here, I said we didn't have any hard power in Israel, so the Pentagon responded, put the base there. I'm joking. We put the base there for the same reason we have tripwire forces in other places. We put the base there so that there can be no question in the minds of the American people when the president directs U.S. forces into Israel equipped to go into Syria, because we will have been attacked. And the disposition of that base is just sitting on an Israeli air base, and we put the stars and, you know, the stars and stripes up and declared it a U.S. air base. It's four Patriot batteries, as far as I know. But it's there, and it's U.S. territory. So when missiles start flying, or, God forbid, the IRGC actually tries to put guerrillas into Israel proper, then we are being attacked, too. And so when we go to Congress, if Trump feels like he has to go to Congress, he isn't going to have to, probably. Congress is going to be demanding that the president take action.
Well, that's a very sobering end here. Okay, another question. Go. We are out of time, but one more. Okay, Grant, you get special. What are the possibilities of a 9/11 Mossad op-type strike to propel us into Iran like it did in Iraq? I don't know who wants to take that.
I think you've got the ingredients, adequate ingredients right now. We have about 3,200 troops in Syria. You've got Secretary Mattis and Secretary Tillerson both saying we're staying there because we need to confront the Iranian elements that are trying to establish this corridor. And are too close to Israel. You've got the President of the United States contradicting them and saying, no, when we've done with ISIS, we're leaving. Of course, that's an ambiguity. When are you done with ISIS? You could say you're never going to be done with ISIS, not completely, but the policy is not clear right now. But there are all the ingredients in place, including Russian-U.S. aircraft being deconflicted on an hourly basis by direct communications. You got all the ingredients for a wider war, and for a bang like that, that suddenly becomes, you got the same thing in the South China Sea when the Chinese sink a U.S. aircraft carrier. What are the American people going to do when 5,000 souls, $14 billion is on the bottom of the ocean because the Chinese are going to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier? Guarantee you. What are we going to do? Is it going to be over Taiwan? Are we then going to defend Taiwan? Probably not. Most Americans will probably get anxious about that. But this is what we're courting in the world now at a time when our power has been dramatically reduced from what it was in 1945. And we don't recognize that. We simply don't recognize that. Too many enemies.
Okay, I think we will end this panel at this point. And we have a couple. Thank you so much. You have depressed us beyond words. So we have a couple end remarks. Do you want to go first?